Welcome to Populist and Happy New Year and welcome back. We haven't seen you in a long time and something Woo-hoo! Else, I'm sure, but it's so good to be back. It's episode 38 of Populist. We are back from a long absence and we are glad to be here. It's the beginning of season 3 for our show. I'm Steve Hafer, and from the nation's capital with me, as always, is the Groot to my rocket. It's Kirk Treutner. Hey, Kirk.
I don't ever want to be the Groot to your rocket. Can we rephrase that in some other way, shape, or form? I was going to start with 7 years ago, but I think that's been done and much better than I. How you doing? Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back. It seems weird. It seems like the rust might still be here. I'm not sure. We'll find out, I guess.
And you know what? The rust is what makes it all better. It makes it honest. It makes it pure. It makes it real. We're not faking it.
Time to introduce our new sponsor, Rust-Oleum. Just kidding. Okay. Season 2 did end a little abruptly for all the different reasons that we explained in our mini episode.
It did.
Earlier in the fall. But now we are back bringing things a little more like they used to be for Season 3. However, we will have a couple changes of how we present our list. So just mixing it up, keeping it fresh. Nothing too startling, but hopefully just breaking it up from the norm.
No matter what, we hope you still find it entertaining as we bring you our top 10 lists on some various and different subjects. And what are we doing this week, Steve?
This week, today specifically, we are doing what I consider to be one of the constants of American cinema from over the past, you know, almost 20 years. And that is Marvel films. It seems like it's become one of those, like I said, most consistently constant things that you can find at any theater. There's usually, you know, 2 to 3, if not more, of them a year. And it's kind of become the standard for how action films are done, how, you know, effects are done and so forth. And so we're going to talk about Marvel films.
It's pretty remarkable. I mean, when you consider the output over the last, I think you said 15, 20 years, the quality that they have maintained, the ability to engage as many people as they have using properties that are 40, 50, 60 years old. You know, people have their preconceived notions of who these heroes should be. You know, you and I talked a little bit about this before we got into it, but I've been collecting comic books, or I collected comic books in the 70s and 80s, and I really had my favorites: Captain America, Iron Man, the Fantastic Four, X-Men. So I had in my mind what I wanted them to be on film. Sometimes they got it right, sometimes they got it wrong, but it was never perfect. But man, I got to tell you, the way they've captured a lot of these heroes over the last 20 years has been pretty close. And it's going to be interesting to see where we measure these different films up in our top 10 list.
Yeah, for sure. And you brought up a good point. I think much like the Lord of the Rings properties, you know, going from those books to the thing, Marvel is every bit as big, if not bigger, you know, as far as their core readers over the years. And what you read, and even though it was an illustrated form for the Marvel films as comic books, or the Marvel characters as comics, it's still a whole different thing when they're live and living and breathing up there on the big screen, and you're watching everything, and you're seeing the personalities come out, and how do their powers come to play? What new powers do they gain with new skills? How do the personal relationships work between them all? It's all great stuff, very interesting, and worthy of a topic for us today, I think.
I mean, if you look at it, there were some films done from Marvel properties before the MCU. I mean, the two Fantastic Four films that were done, actually three of them, they were terrible.
The Not-So-Fantastic Four.
The Captain America film that was done way back when was terrible. So we have a lot of examples of how not to do it. And the fact that Kevin Feige, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, came in and took control of the Marvel Universe, and they've produced consistent product, film after film after film. It's actually a really remarkable accomplishment. I mean, it's something people will look back on in 40 and 50 years, and really, it's like Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak. How do you maintain this film after film after film? Have there been a couple clunkers looking at you, Eternals? Yes. But by and large, they've told a grandiose story over 20 years, and they're still going.
Absolutely. And he's a great captain of the overall ship. You know, he's bringing culture of consistency. He finds great writers. He finds really good and inventive directors. And the casting has been fantastic for the most part. I think they're, I'd put them at like a 95, 98% success clip for their casting. They get some really good people placed really well in these roles, and they bring a lot of interest to them.
I'm going to ask you a quick question then.
Okay.
Because you and I both did the same thing. We went back and watched a lot of the movies to make this list.
A lot.
How many truly A-list actors did you forget had been in Marvel movies over the last 20 years?
Oh, yeah. And it's...
I mean, my top five, I completely forgot about Tommy Lee Jones in the first Captain America movie.
Yeah.
Completely forgot about Michael Keaton in one of the Spider-Man films.
Yeah.
Completely forgot about Glenn Close in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
There are so many, you know, it's easy to forget that Robert Redford was in a Marvel movie.
And,
you know, Harrison Ford's going to be in a new one.
Yeah. And other great actors like Benicio del Toro, you know, who's smaller reoccurring role in the Guardians and the Avengers and things. Yeah. Your point is very well taken. And Black Panther is just filled with these guys. It goes down to Angela Bassett, Martin Freeman, you know,
Yeah.
More and more guys, Guardians,
Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah. Michael Rooker in the Guardians, John C. Reilly, Glenn Close, you mentioned before.
Stallone.
Yeah.
Stallone was in Guardians too.
Exactly.
I completely forgot about that. And you begin to realize the roster of the actors that have been in these films. Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Was in Guardians too.
Yep.
You know, you completely forget about these people. Not that they did forgettable roles, but there's just such a wealth that you move on to the next one and go, okay, who's next? It's like popcorn. You want to know who the next one is.
Forrest Whitaker and Black Panther. I mean, yeah, just
yes.
It just keeps going on, and you'll just sit here and think about him and think about him and think about him. Jeff Bridges. Yeah, a lot of great stuff.
Yeah.
It's really, really
good. Yeah, and really the great. Very first one. That's right. The first Iron Man.
So what is the overall criteria? You mentioned it, you know, you're an old comic book reader and everything. Did that play a big part? What's your criteria as you were going into this? What were you looking for?
I had a couple of things. I touched on a little bit of it. Again, being a comic book fan, I had my expectations. I had my preconceived notions. You know, I mentioned Seinfeld as being kind of the poster child for delivering on none of the expectations that the world had for their season, their series finale. Nobody liked that series finale. Everybody loved the Next Generation, Star Trek, the Next Generation series finale. So it's hard to deliver on something that everybody wants you to Lost. Lost did not deliver to everybody what they wanted for the series finale. It's really hard to deliver on that. And I think Marvel has done that time and time again. So that's going to be something that I'll touch upon with my list as well. Also, did they stick the landing? They set themselves up to deliver. They promised a lot of stuff as they built through these films. Did they stick the landing?
Mm-hmm.
That's something else I looked at as well, because all of the movies to me are entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, even the Thor films.
Wow.
even Ragnarok and Love and Thunder. They're entertaining. They're throwaway. I'm not going to watch them again anytime soon, but they're entertaining. They're like pizza. Even when it's bad, it's still pretty good. But did they deliver? Did they not only meet but surpass the expectation that you have as a kid growing up reading the comics, as a fan growing up watching the movies? But those are a lot of things that went into what I looked at. What did they do to continue the movement forward? Did they deliver? Did they meet an expectation? That's a lot of the stuff. I mean, it's a lot I'm kind of putting out there right now, and I'll hopefully pay it off as the list goes on. But that's a lot of the stuff I looked at, because again, all of these are entertaining. I have not had a bad time at a Marvel movie. In fact, you and I, with your son, actually saw the very first Iron Man together.
That's right.
And we loved it.
Absolutely. Yeah, for me, the Marvel films, and particularly the MCU films overall, it's not just about the heroes and fighting evil. You know, it's what I like and take from them is it's the whole encompassing story where it gets into about, it's about heart and duty and sacrifice and the personal relationships, especially when you start getting into the movies like the Avengers, and you start to have those conflicts of how do they see the world? Where do they see themselves in it? What approach should they take? And it becomes very interesting. I think Marvel does a great job with that. It'd be very easy to be I'm a good guy, those are bad guys, and they're doing this bad, and I'm going to find them and fight them and bring them to justice. But they don't. They do a lot more, and it's a great way to keep a long-running series going. So I look for story, with the overall story, character arcs, the technical aspects for sure, the directing, the shots that they use, the CGI, the stunts, etc., and the flow of the film. Does it grab you? Does it hold your interest? Does it have a great finish? And for the most part, as you said, they do, and they do it well. There's a couple that, not so well, and some that might be a little roller coaster, have an ebb and flow as far as pacing within the story. And so when you're splitting hairs like we're about to, I think with our top 10 list, some very good films just missed my list because it might have come down to something like that, you know? So there we are.
I agree. There's a lot of different ways we're gonna split those hairs, and I'm looking forward to see how we look at individual films and the criteria we apply to each one of them. Again, I think we can both agree they're all entertaining. They're all good films.
That's right.
So let's get to it.
Yeah. And we were so psyched to do this episode. It originally was supposed to finish off season two. It was going to be our closer for season two. But since we didn't quite get to it, we didn't want to jettison it. And we thought, well, it's important and it would be a good one to start season three off. So here we are. Let's talk about our picks. And that brings us to
the over under.
And I think it's my turn to set the over under this time. This one is just hard because there's a finite set. There's only 30. We talked about 30 Marvel movies, so there's not a ton. So that lends for maybe a number of commonalities. So I'm going to set the common picks, the same movies that show up on both of our lists, at 5.5.
Over.
Yeah. See, I was about to go 6.5. I think you might be right. Okay. However, on the other end of the spectrum, I think it's going to be hard, especially since you're coming at it from an ex-comic book reader. I'm coming from a different place. So the exact matches, I'm going to set at 1.5. Now, I will say, I really feel like it might be 0.5, but that's no fun. So I'm going to say 1.5.
Over.
Oh, over. Okay. Interesting.
Yep.
All right. Duly marked. And that brings us to
Unlisted.
And on the enlisted portion of our show, Kirk and I will throw out three names of movies that you will not be seeing on our list today. Kirk, you started off. What are your three unlisted movies?
On my list, you're not going to hear the film The Eternals. You're not going to hear any of the Thor films. That's one name. Thor, but no, all the films. Not.
It's the Kirk cheat.
So we're getting our Kirk cheat out of the way in the unlisted. Gotcha.
Not yet. No, there's still more to come on that. Oh,
really?
Hey, it's been a while. I got to get my cheats in. And you're also not going to hear Wakanda Forever, Black Panther 2.
Interesting. For me, you will not hear anything about the original The Incredible Hulk from 2008, starring Edward Norton as Banner and Hulk.
Another actor you forget that was in a big Marvel movie.
Right there. You will not be seeing the original Thor on my list either, or the original and hopefully last of The Eternals. But that's just a personal opinion.
Well, there's one match. Is that one of the matches, the exact matches that we both had Eternals on our unlisted?
No, not so fast there, Shifty. All right. And with that being said, let's get into it with
number 10.
My number 10 is Spider-Man Homecoming. I put it there again. This is going into the realm of pulling something off. There had been, half a dozen Spider-Man movies, with Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield before this. With Spider-Man Homecoming, Marvel finally took over the producing of the films, and they produced a movie and created an actor in the role of Peter Parker in Spider-Man that felt like he was been there all along. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was introduced in Civil War, given his own film with Homecoming, and he always felt like he belonged in this universe. It was an entertaining story. It set the stage. It accurately put Peter Parker in high school, gave him that whole persona that Stan Lee created that had the Aunt May character, the sacrifice of Uncle Ben. I mean, it told all of these stories, put it into context, and gave us the Spider-Man, at least the one I always thought should have been on screen. I never really bought Tobey Maguire. I never really bought Andrew Garfield. I never liked the Fox versions of these films. But this took all of that even in the rearview mirror, and created a brand new Spider-Man for the MCU that felt like he'd been there all along.
Yeah.
So not only was it an entertaining movie, again, they pulled off something that I thought was very difficult. Therefore, Spider-Man Homecoming is my number 10.
Yeah, I like the Garfield, I like the Tobey Maguire versions a lot, actually. The Andrew Garfield ones didn't really care for him. It wasn't because of him. I thought he could have been a very, very good Spider-Man. I think it was just the script, the approach, the scenario, whatever. But these Tom Holland ones and the fact that they are co-owned by Sony and Marvel, and there was that whole famous behind-the-scene legal squabble about who's going to control what and distribute what and this and this and this. They overcame all that, and they produced, just as you said, the freshest of the bit and of the bunch, and I love it. And it's may appear a little later on mine, but my number 10 is Doctor Strange. The reason I like this, and truth be told, you'll hear on my honorable mentions, my unlisted part two, there's like at least three other movies that were all fighting for this number 10 spot. But I gave it to Doctor Strange because it is, one, it's a beautiful movie. The colors, the vibrancy, the cinematography is fantastic. It's our intro into the astral plane and time bending, which is growing into a major component of the MCU as the movies after it are starting to
seize
a hold of that. Yeah. It's got a great cast. Benedict Cumberbatch is as Dr. Stephen Strange is fantastic. He is so hard to like at the beginning of the movie because he's so arrogant and so self-absorbed, and he's an incredibly talented surgeon, but until something goes wrong and then he has to try to find a special way to heal himself. And along with that, he starts to open up his mind to new possibilities of things that he didn't even know could exist, and whole new truths and new ways of looking at life and experiencing new dimensions, where it just becomes a great, great film. We see the Eye of, what's it called? Eye of Agamotto, I think, which holds the time stone. And we meet the Cloak of Levitation, two very big, important factors in the MCU and the Avengers stuff. But I just really like the bend of him from arrogant surgeon into what becomes, by the end of the movie, the new master wizard, since the ancient one has passed during the movie. Interesting backgrounds, interesting scenery. Mads Mikkelsen, always a great actor, a great villain in this. Benedict Wong.
Great villain.
Yeah. We get to meet who is.
Well, again, talk about great casting.
Yeah, absolutely. And the stunts and the visuals are just fantastic. So that's my number 10, Doctor Strange.
You know, Doctor Strange did not make my list. That was going to be one of my second ones. Because it, you know, that was a character that had a great past. I mean, that was somebody who was introduced before I got into them, and I was never really into the Doctor Strange character in the comics because it was a very psychedelic character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jim Steranko did a lot of the psychedelic stuff in the 60s with him.
Sure.
And the way that they applied that in these films, I mean, the journey was the same. Arrogant doctor to enlightened, you know, master of the mystic arts was the same. And they told the story, I thought, really well in, you know, the 2-hour period that they had to do that in. Introducing new characters, the levitating cloak, all of those things are trappings of the Doctor Strange universe. And I thought they did that all very well and brought it together in that one movie. And again, like you said, there's a lot of movies that could have been tied for number 10. This would have been one of those for me.
I see.
But I really like Doctor Strange.
Yeah, it's there's a lot to like for sure. Well, let's move on to
number 9.
My number 9 is one of the other Spider-Man movies, Spider-Man No Way Home. I agree with a lot of things you said, as I discussed when you talked about Spider-Man Homecoming. Tom Holland is just great in the role of Spider-Man in every single one of his films. He's that young, inexperienced, but brave and smart and good-hearted guy who just really just wants to do good. And he's almost as much of a fan of the superheroes as anything. You know, it's not that he's thinking that he's badass and this and this and this. He's just trying to live up to thing. And now he has this chance to do good and he wants to grab it. Zendaya is MJ, Jacob Batalon is Ned, Marissa Tomei is Aunt May, Favreau is Happy. They're all great supporting characters for the Spider-Man movies. And this particular movie gets a big dose of the multiverse, which we talked about, and we see Doctor Strange again. And through this multiverse, the world that Peter Parker knows just gets thrown upside down as he tries to get Doctor Strange to put on a time spell so he can make the world forget about Peter Parker and stop the bad consequences that were happening to him and his loved ones for the fact that everybody found out who Spider-Man was. And then with that messing with time comes villains from the past, villains from other movies, the Green Goblin with Willem Dafoe, Doc Ock with Alfred Molina. Here's some more of those guys, Electro, Jamie Foxx, you know, Lizard, Sandman, all these guys. But then also here comes Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man's from the previous movies, which brings them all into the multiverse. It's a very bold attempt to tackle the multiverse. I think they do it pretty darn well overall. There's a lot of good humor. There's some really touching moments, some very good messages delivered. So that's my number nine.
I could not agree with you more. I will talk about it a little bit later on as I've got a little higher on my list. But my number nine was Captain America, the Winter Soldier. You know, we've been very complimentary about regarding Marvel, but it doesn't mean they haven't had their slight missteps. You know, after the success of Iron Man, after the success of Thor, you know, Iron Man 2 and Thor: The Dark World were not exactly barn burners. They were not improvements on the first film. Captain America: The Winter Soldier, I think, was an improvement on the first film. And I'm going to contradict myself, and you'll see why a little bit later on. But I say it was an improvement. It stepped up the game. It took the character, now firmly established in present time, and created a very taut thriller. It was a conspiracy theory. It was finding out that the government wasn't maybe the best thing in the world. And for Steve Rogers, a man of the 40s, to find out that his government was not supporting him the way he should, that's a huge realization for him. And that was a great platform for the filmmakers to show us, hey, you know, this is what the world that we live in right now as well. It reintroduced Bucky Barnes that he knew in the first film as the Winter Soldier. It brought the Black Widow more into the forefront. It, again, gave Robert Redford a chance to choose some scenery as well. It had some great fight sequences in it. And it really established Captain America, not from the origin story of the first film, but his role in the present day and how he was going to deal with the realities of modern day as well. It was deeper than a lot of the Marvel films that we have seen, and I really liked it. I was very surprised I would like it. I still wanted to see a lot of the, you know, you got him, Steve, from the first movie, and they really put him in a new kind of cynical universe that he had to still be that beacon and shining light in. And I thought it was a great counterpoint, and I loved the movie, thought it was great. Captain America: The Winter Soldier is my number nine.
Very, very good. Yeah, I like this movie a lot, too. You know, that's all I'm going to say right now. So let's move on.
Number eight.
So my number eight, I'm going to take one of the big ones off the table right now. Not off the table, but mention it. My number eight is The Avengers, the very first Avengers. So I'll be talking a lot more here then. We've talked a lot about individual characters up until now. Captain America, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man. The Avengers was the first kind of pushing all the chips all in. Can we do it? Can we take all of these characters, bring them together, not only make this movie cohesive with what we've laid down in the movies leading up to this for them, but make this overall movie entertaining as well? We've all seen, you know, jam sessions with musicians that just don't work, right? This was not only one that worked, but worked incredibly well. And say what you will about Joss Whedon, I think he really had the Marvel mentality. He knew exactly when to drop in the humor. He had a lot of the action sequences nailed. The characters were true to what they did. We gave Hawkeye a little bit of an elevated role. We gave Black Widow a little bit of an elevated role. Hulk had some great scenes. You know, it was a chance to reintroduce Hulk as well, and really establish him in the universe after, you know, the kind of misstep of the first Incredible Hulk movie with Ed Norton, as you had mentioned a little earlier. But nobody thought it could be done. Nobody could say this is the Avengers. And you know what? This was the Avengers. This is exactly what I expected when I was a kid reading those comics. I wanted to see all of these characters together, true to who they were, defeating a common enemy. And I think they did it incredibly well. The humor was there. The action was there. The heart was there. it paid off in spades for me. That's why The Avengers is my number eight.
Yeah. And that's really the trick of that movie. You've known about these guys. You've seen most of their standalone movies up to this point, and boom, here they are together. It's what you've been waiting for. And a lesser fan-friendly company might have made you wait longer. Thank God these guys didn't, because they had a master plan.
Or try to do too much.
Yeah. It was executed very well. Well, as I said, my number eight is Captain America, The Winter Soldier, which you talked a lot about, directed by the Russo brothers, a very talented pair of directors, and they do a great job. I agree with everything you said, and it's that aspect that this is just a really good movie. It's part conspiracy and mystery movie, with all wrapped up within a Marvel movie. We get to, you know, meet the Winter Soldier, a Hydra assassin who's trying to kill Nick Fury. We see this conspiracy between S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra. We get to meet Sam Wilson, played by Anthony Mackie, as the Falcon. And what I also love about this is the friendship between Steve Rogers and the Black Widow. It's very good. And Black Widow, she's like best friends with three different Avengers. She's like the special friend of Cap. She's the special friend of Hawkeye, the special friend of Hulk. So it's like everybody likes Black Widow. And why wouldn't you?
Was that Scarlett Johansson or Scarlett Letter?
Whoa. It's a movie that is just, it's captivating from the beginning. They don't disappoint anywhere along the road. You know, S.H.I.E.L.D. gets eliminated, which leaves Nick Fury, Steve, Natasha, and Sam all kind of left as, for lack of a better word, free agents, which will become the Avengers. And at the end of the movie, I like seeing that S.H.I.E.L.D. has had Loki's scepter this whole time, just that with one of the Tesseracts, which is one of those little reminders and how they keep building for the next thing. Another brilliant gem that Marvel does is always teasing us for the next thing to come along. It's good stuff.
Now, I think Marvel does great. You know, we haven't even talked at all about the fact that they're the ones that introduced, you know, the mid-credits post scene and then the final credits post scene. You know, now we expect every movie to have it.
Yeah.
But when we saw the first one in Iron Man, where you're like, wait, holy crap. Is that Thor's hammer?
Yeah.
Are they, what, huh? I mean, that was that first, like, so this isn't just one. There could be more.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that, and now it's expected, you know, you go through it and, you know, that's part of the fun of the Marvel movies. They've almost reinvented the movie going experience in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. And it's fun to see how the audience has gotten educated, because earlier on, you know, nobody knew that it was coming. Then after this was done a few times, then the people would sit there and, like, my son would sit there and go, oh, He doesn't know. As people are leaving during the credits, they go, not a Marvel fan, doesn't know, first time, this. And now, like you said, you expect it almost for every movie. It's gotten really bad, and everybody stays, and it's fun.
And as another example is that other films try and do it, but it's not nearly as successful. They'll drop something mid-credits, you're like, okay, that's it. Marvel just has their finger on the pulse. They know exactly how much, you know, to drop out there for you to nibble on and go, okay, I can't wait to see the next thing.
With the one exception of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That's a great end credit scene. Comes out of the shower. Yeah.
That was a great end credit scene. That's true.
All right. Well, that brings us to the place where we move forward with
number seven.
And my number seven was a lot of people's best movie ever, best Marvel movie ever, this. I'm not sure if I'm in that camp. It is a really, really, really good movie, but it is 2018's Black Panther, directed by Ryan Coogler. It is a big movie with big visuals, tons of action, and it introduces us to the secret and the important nation of Wakanda, in which we got a taste of when we met T'Challa for the first time in Captain America, The Winter Soldier, played by Chadwick Boseman, of course. We see Wakanda as a high-tech, advanced world in which the Black Panther lives. It's steeped in traditions and heritage, and we get a real good feeling for that. It has a great villain in Andy Serkis, but then an even better one in Michael B. Jordan's Eric Killmonger. You get two villains for the price of one movie. A lot of good supporting cast. Shuri, played by Letitia Wright, his younger sister, who's just a brilliant tech and science mind. And she helps to separate Bucky from his Hydra programming, which is important going forward for these movies. Huge battle at the climax, setting the style and stakes for later battles that will show up in later Avenger movies, kind of bringing the big epic battle into the forefront. Kirk mentioned before, some of these amazing characters, you know, and actors, Angela Bassett, Martin Freeman, Daniel Kaluuya, Danai Gurira, Lupita Nyong'o, Forest Whitaker, Winston Duke, you know, a lot of these great, great actors that bless these Marvel films. And a lot of them are in Black Panther itself, which just rounds out the movie even more. Terrific movie, enjoyable from beginning to end. I know a lot of people might disagree with me. It didn't make my Mount Rushmore, but in all honesty, those my top eight are really, really strong films in my mind. And so it's not because I don't like it. And it's deserving movie to be on my list.
Well, I don't want to rush more towards this film, but I'll talk about it a little bit later on in my list. One of the things I loved about Black Panther, and I'll talk more a little later, but I love the breadcrumbs that were dropped in some of the earlier films, the introduction of Wakanda and the Black Panther in the film, but then how they also brought Bucky Barnes and tied the rest of the universe into this area, and it all made sense. It wasn't done just for the sake of doing it. It made sense. And that's another thing they've done is weave a lot of these films together in ways that you might not think about, but they all collectively make sense. Again, I'll talk about it a little bit more. But let me talk about my number seven, which is the film you put at number nine, and that is Spider-Man No Way Home. And all the things that you talked about, I completely agree with. But the two things I want to touch on is this was a movie that had a lot of things to accomplish. First and foremost, it was the last of the Home trilogy, Homecoming, Far From Home, No Way Home, Spider-Man trilogy. So they had to cap it off. You know, it wasn't the end of the story, but it was the end of that trilogy. We introduced the idea of the multiverse. And this was important for so many reasons, not for a storytelling element only in this film, but it's launching all of Phase 2. As we know, the multiverse plays a huge role going forward. And who knows who could be resurrected? Who knows who we could meet? Who knows where we could go? But the multiverse is the big thing. The way the Tesseract kind of was and the Five Stones were, the Infinity Stones were in the first big phase.
Mm-hmm.
The multiverse is in the second one. So this really had to kind of cement that and show what the possibilities were. Not only that, this film gave great fan service because people wanted to see Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man again. And they did it in a way that made sense. It wasn't self-serving. It wasn't like, okay, we're bringing him in for 5 minutes. I'm going to get back on. It made sense and it worked and it was touching. I thought this film had a lot to accomplish.
And they were needed.
And it made sense in the film.
Yeah, they were needed. They were integral to the plot, to the resolution. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, on top of all that, what this was truly doing was tying up all the loose ends from the Sony movies that Spider-Man did. They brought back all the villains. They gave Doc Ock a great swan song. All the other villains got a chance to shine a little bit. It was a great kind of going away party for them. So talk about all these things the film had to accomplish, but it went down so easy. It was an enjoyable film. It made sense all along the way. I think it was a necessary element to help launch this next big phase of Marvel. So, you know, for all the reasons that I just listed, plus the fact it was fun, enjoyable film, it's my number seven.
Yeah, really good film, really strong. But then again, I love Spider-Man. All right. Well, that brings us to
number six.
Kirk Turner, what is your number six?
My number six is a film that I was really surprised by. You know, Marvel has done a great job of turning A-listers into big stars. Iron Man, Captain America. All right. You know, they're going to do the same thing with the Fantastic Four. You know, when they finally get the X-Men and Wolverine and Deadpool, all these A-listers, they're going to do fine. But when you're talking about a tree, a raccoon, Thanos' daughter, a grief-stricken murderer, and a wisecracking man child. These are not the A-listers that you expect to become big stars. But I just listed the Guardians of the Galaxy. And the first Guardians of the Galaxy was a lot of fun. I'm usually not for all of the wisecracking, again, the Thor films, but it brought humor to it. It introduced these characters in a unique way. It was so much better, honestly, than the comic books ever were. I always loved the comics, but these guys were C-listers. And I'm going to drop a name. Everybody can step over it. I did a quick event with Chris Pratt right after this movie came out. And we had a quick conversation. I said, I was a comic book collector. And I said, you got to be happy with the way that the film goes. I said, because these were not well-known characters. And he looked at me and just kind of went, I know. It's amazing. I mean, he was just as surprised that these kind of C-list stars became A-listers in the Marvel Universe. It was fun. It was unique. It opened up a whole new world of storytelling for Marvel. It helped them, again, bring in the Infinity Stones. It brought Benicio del Toro as the collector in, which allowed you to tell more stories as well. Wasn't crazy about the second one, but I thought the first one was a lot of fun. It was so much more than I ever expected. And for that alone, I'm putting it at number six.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. Your point's well taken, because arguably the biggest name is just providing voiceover and Bradley Cooper. I mean, you can go around and around about who's bigger, but...
Or Vin Diesel.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm going to put Bradley Cooper as a little more accomplished actor in my book than Vin, but yeah.
I am Groot.
He does that very well, too. And the humor does work because it's not done for the purposes of let's insert a joke here. It's all coming from the character, that they are all from different places. They're all very different in their approaches, their beliefs, their customs, the way they talk, the way they think, their, you know, everything, and their insecurities. And so it all comes from that. And it's very germane, and I love it. It's great stuff.
It works. It works.
Good choice. My number six is the movie that you had as your number eight, and that is the 2012 epic The Avengers, directed by Joss Whedon. You kind of nailed it with everything you said. What I liked about it is, as we talked about, we finally got to see our heroes together for the first time. And I got to say, I am not a Hulk fan. I didn't very much care for the old TV series. The Edward Norton version, didn't like it, but man, Mark Ruffalo is so good. In my estimation, nails Banner, plays the transition and the duality between the two personalities and the conflict that it creates so well. Love him as Hulk. It was a great ad. We get to meet Jeremy Renner as Hawkeye for the first time, and Thanos. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is the first time that we meet Thanos, correct?
I think it was
short.
Yeah, it's the very end, and they teased it very well. There's another actor you forget is in the Marvel Universe because you really don't see his face.
Josh Brolin.
Exactly.
Yeah. An excellent actor.
Yeah. Yes.
And the Avengers to me is, it's kind of where the whole concept of the MCU comes together, and man, did they pay it off in a big way. Tom Hiddleston, another fantastic actor as Loki. His whole thing where he murders Agent Coulson. We see Agent Coulson while escaping S.H.I.E.L.D. And then he uses the Tesseract to open the portal in space, allowing this massive alien invasion. The battle is amazing. The effects are great. Watching the teamwork and the single purpose from all these heroes is great. And it's what the fans came for. I love the long ranging effects of this movie, though, because the effects of the battle itself, the battle in New York, is seen throughout various movies, especially like in Iron Man 3, where Tony Stark's having full on anxiety issues with that. He can't get over it. And then eventually when he does have to face Thanos later on, it's a thing. And same thing for Thor and a couple of the other guys. It could have easily been on my Mount Rushmore or my number five pick, but it ended up here. Like I said, there's a lot of tough movies to go through. Number six, The Avengers.
You know, it's funny. Two of the characters you just mentioned there, Hulk and Loki, came together to create one of my favorite scenes from the film, which was when Loki started giving Hulk a bunch of crap in the Avengers Tower, and Hulk just grabbed him and started throwing him around like a rag doll. Any other director, it could have been handled badly, but it made me laugh out loud, and I will still watch it on YouTube when I want a good laugh. It's just hilarious. It just works really, really well. And that's something else that I think is big about all of this, is that when you come into it, I read Iron Man as a kid. I never pictured Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. Now I can't picture anybody but Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. And that's coming from a fan who's lived with that series for 40 years. And that's another, you know, Chris Evans is Captain America. And Scarlett Johansson is you know, on and on and on. I can't picture anybody else doing this. And that to me is one of the biggest compliments I could pay to this entire series of films.
All right. Moving on.
Number five.
We're one away from Mount Rushmore. And my number five is something you've mentioned already, and that is the original Spider-Man Homecoming, the original Tom Holland standalone. I love it. This was important for a few reasons. 2017 was the first year that Marvel had three MCU films. They'd only done two or one single one for the years prior. This is the first time they had three, and this was one of them. As I've said before, Spidey's one of my three favorite comic book heroes of any universe, any company, period. I love the character. The Maguire films were fine, but Holland's films are just, as we said, complete and well-rounded. It's fun to watch Holland and his portrayal of the education and the growth of Peter Parker as a teen superhero. There's great stuff between him and Tony Stark. A lot of great supporting characters we mentioned before, Aunt May, Happy, Ned, MJ, Flash, so forth. And a refreshingly unique villain in this movie in The Vulture, portrayed by the always great Michael Keaton. Always interesting, always fun to watch, brings a nice energy to it. And the fact that he is MJ's father brings a whole new element to the movie as well. Love the ending where Tony invites Peter to join the Avengers, and he thinks about it, but then he declines because in his heart of hearts, he just knows right now the best thing for him to do is just continue and proceed as your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, which is really the root of the character. It's what he is.
I'm so glad you said that, because that's exactly what I was thinking.
And he has the wherewithal and the wisdom at this young age to know this is where I should be. I'm glad to have his respect, and I'm glad to have the invite. Hopefully that will come back again some other time. And I love that about this movie and his portrayal. So that's my number five, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Even though it worked, putting Spider-Man out in space and being a cosmic Spider-Man, he's best when he is your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, 10 or 12 blocks, and that's his turf, and he's a high school kid. Again, what they have done to recapture Spider-Man from the Sony films.
Yeah.
And, you know, make him a little bit younger. Tom Holland, I wasn't sure about Tom Holland when I first saw pictures of him and all that, but the first film, it was like, you got me. This is Peter Parker. It worked perfect. Even Marissa Tomei is Aunt May.
Yeah.
I mean, Aunt May in the comics was 90 years old.
Yeah.
But we, you know, to have a young, hot Aunt May was a little bit different, but it worked.
Because we meet them in Civil War. That's the first time that we meet both of them. And he walks into his apartment, I remember, and Tony's there and he's kind of hitting on Aunt May because he thinks she's just kind of hot. And then
he's Tony Stark.
Yeah. And then they talk, and that's the first time we see Spider-Man. So now we get the payoff with this standalone, and it delivered.
It did. I'm going to bet my number five is not on your list at all.
Oh, really?
I love this movie, and it doesn't get a lot of love, but I think it is a great example of what Marvel has done. Again, taking a B or C list or even D list character. And we're talking about a character that was really born, I'm going to give a little hint here, out of the Bruce Lee era of the 70s and turned him into what I thought was one of the best standalone movies that Marvel has done. And that is Shang-Chi, The Legend of the Ten Rings, is my number five. I thought all of the actors are great. I'm not really a big Awkwafina fan, but I thought she was great. But out of the entire cast, not only was the lead terrific, but Tony Leung as the villain in the film was spectacular. Could be one of the best performances in the Marvel universe because he was the big bad. He was the villain. He was the bad guy, but you never hated him. You empathized with him. The performance was so nuanced and so wonderful. And I enjoyed every second he was on screen, but I love the way that they took this character. And again, this was a Kung Fu character that I want to say Doug Mensch and one other guy created back in the 70s, which was obviously a response to the Bruce Lee phenomenon of the 70s. You know, and they created a film that showcased Chinese culture incredibly well, cast it incredibly well, and gave us an action adventure film that fit into the Marvel universe, but still told its own story. I think the lead actor's name, I'm going to say it wrong, Shim Limu, was terrific. Michelle Yeoh was terrific. I liked Awkwafina, as I said earlier. I thought they told a compelling story. I thought the action scenes were done well. I truly enjoyed the film. I didn't think I would as much. It was one of those ones that I went to going, okay, it's a Marvel film. I'll go see it because I have to. I'm a completionist, so I want to see all of them. And I came out of that going, this is probably the best standalone film since Black Panther.
Interesting. It is one of those three movies that were vying with Doctor Strange for number 10 for me. I love it also. I also am not an Awkwafina fan, but I have to give her props. She didn't
annoy you.
Upstage the movie. She didn't try to take it into her own special direction. She played within the confines and she played well, and it was effective. I still think they could have cast somebody else for that role that would have been a little better, but I have to give her props. I would not say she was bad. I think she was good.
I thought she was great, actually.
The bus scene in that movie, the fight in the bus, is one of the better fights I've seen, period. It's really well done.
Absolutely.
Choreographed, orchestrated, so good. Everything you said is fantastic. Strange got the benefit of the doubt for me because there are some similar visuals, like with the moving forest, which was ingenious and everything, but we've already kind of started to see that with Doctor Strange and, yes, the movie Inception, which is not a Marvel movie before that. But Shang-Chi, right. Very, very strong. Just missed my number 10. Okay, now that brings us to
Mount Rushmore.
Our Mount Rushmore. That's our top four, the best of the best, the top of the litter, the cream of the crop. Kirk, you start us off. What is your
number four?
My number four is the origin story of one of my favorite superheroes, and that is Captain America, the First Avenger. The biggest question I have out of all of this is, why was Joe Johnson never invited back to direct another Marvel movie? I thought he did a great job. You're telling an origin story that everybody knows about, and he told it in a way that was compelling. I thought that Chris Evans played both halves of Captain America, both skinny Steve Rogers and full-on super soldier Captain America, both very well. I think Haley Atwell is hot, is good. and then again, another one of those forgotten actors, Tommy Lee Jones.
Yep.
I thought they did a wonderful job in telling a story of Steve Rogers of the 1940s, becoming Captain America, going on his first missions, the Howling Commandos, which was kind of a nice Easter egg, because that's who Nick Fury led back in the 1940s as well. The end of the film where he was discovered in the being frozen in the sub, you know, setting up the next thing that's going on. There was, again, a lot of Easter eggs, the whole World's Fair thing with Howard Stark being introduced, and you kind of go, wait, is that Tony Stark? Is that Hugo Weaving? There's another actor we forget about as the Red Skull. And the Red Skull is one of those iconic Captain America characters, and it was pulled off very well. As a Cap fan, I watched it and it checked every box that I wanted to see. And I went, okay, if you're going to do a Captain America origin story, that's it. Everything else should branch out from there. And obviously they did that, but Captain America, that was where I could exhale and go, okay, they've got it. They know what they're doing. So Captain America, the First Avenger, is my number four.
Yeah, it is a good movie. It is also one of those four that were fighting for number 10 for me. There are parts of it where I thought, even though it's in the comic books and everything, like when he's doing the, you know, the buy bonds USO type shows and everything, it's, you know, it's well represented from what was in the comic books, but it took a little too long, a little too much. Everything, there were certain parts that just, they could have tightened them up a little bit for me. And also the whole movie is a little too dark for me, not in its tone, but in the actual lighting and colorization. It's a little devoid of color.
What you mean.
It's a little devoid of color, a little dark. It's almost like they were trying to go for that movie reel sepia tone effect sometimes. And I think they just took it a little too far. Doesn't make it not a great movie, because it is, and everything you said applies. But as far as the tiebreakers go, that came into play for me. And so I like the big, bold, colorful, mystical Doctor Strange a little better than that. But great movie nonetheless. My number four is a movie that you mentioned before, and that is Guardians of the Galaxy, the original. I do like Volume 2 as well with Kurt Russell, but this one is the one. And for a lot of the reasons you said, it was a bunch of unknowns to a lot of moviegoers, especially the ones who aren't comic book readers. A lot of people didn't even know what Guardians of the Galaxy was. They didn't even know this was part of a comic hero series, but it is, and boy, does this film deliver. It has great pace, a great look, a very good story, humor, action, music, relationships. It has it all, and it does it all well, and it delivers a ton of information in a finite time. It just doesn't feel like your typical introduction into a series. Nothing suffers in the script as you're meeting all these characters for the first time. You mentioned all these great guys. I got to hand it out. Chris Pratt is fantastic, but Dave Bautista was the one who blew me away. I had no idea he'd be this good. And now every other thing that I've seen him in, including the recent Knives Out, Glass Onion, the guy is a good actor. He is really, really strong. We see one of the Power Stones for the first time. We learn more about Thanos. So not only is it a fun time, but it's also important as far as setting up what comes next along the journey for the MCU. I'm not going to talk about it too much more because you said it very well. It's a great movie. It's one of those gems that you don't know what you're going to expect or what you're going to see when you come in, and it just dazzles you. So it's my number four.
Now, I would agree. I think the whole idea of the Infinity Stones being part of that was important for that film because it kind of gave it import.
Yeah.
And it took these C-list characters, and even if the film hadn't been entertaining, just the fact that they were associated with it gave them import in the Marvel Universe, and you had to pay attention to them.
Yeah.
The fact that it was entertaining made even you know, more sense and helped connect the dots a lot more. But that was another one that I expected nothing from and really, really enjoyed it. I mean, if we're talking Captain America or the Avengers or Spider-Man, I've got expectations. Mm-hmm. I really do. But with Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm like, all right, you got a number of different directions you can go. Just make it fun and entertaining. And boy, did they exceed that.
Yes. And when you see the trailers and you're going, there's a CGI raccoon in this holding this big old Gatling gun. And there's this tree thing.
And a wrestler.
Yes. And they're so good. The dialogue and the character of
really,
Rocket.
Really, really good.
Is so great. And then later when Thor joins them and he keeps calling him, what does he call him? A cat or a squirrel or a bunny. He calls him the wrong animal all the time. Yes. It's great.
It is. And it works. It works. It really does.
All right. Moving on.
Number three.
My number three is the movie that I give credit for being so integral for the Marvel Universe, and that is 2008's Iron Man. Directed by Jon Favreau, it is the first of the MCU films and still one of the best from beginning to end, in my opinion. Robert Downey Jr., as Kirk said, is perfection as Tony Stark. I just can't see anybody else doing the role now. He is so arrogant, so egotistical, so sure of himself at the beginning. The movie has pace, and then they hit the explosive device. They're under attack. He gets taken captured, and his whole world changes, thus beginning his journey into finding his new self. Gwyneth Paltrow is fantastic as Pepper Potts. She is smart. She is patient with him. She is tough with him. She's sexy in it. She does everything you need to do, and she does it really, really well. Jeff Bridges, one of the better big name actors to come in the Marvel Universe, in my opinion, again, is fantastic as his partner in business and soon to be rival and villain. And then also we have a one-time appearance by Terrence Howard as Colonel Rhodes, who was later played by Don Cheadle in all the other movies. But you know what? I thought he was fine in this movie.
He was.
I enjoyed him. I loved Don Cheadle, but I'm here to represent Terrence Howard. I think he did a great job. This is a great origin story, told with pace, intellect. That Robert Downey Jr. dry humor is fantastic in it. The thing about this movie that's also I was reflecting on, it was made 6 years after 9/11. And so it was very popular with the audience to see Tony as Iron Man coming out of that cave and defeating the terrorists, you know, in the beginning of the movie. That scored big points. That was a popular way to do it. This film's success was the blueprint for Marvel. That's why I think it's important. It's my number three.
It's a great choice. And believe it or not, I'll be talking about it in just a little bit.
I was hoping you would.
Yeah, I got a couple things I can add to that.
But what is your number three?
My number three is a film that you talked about at number seven, and that is Black Panther. This was a film, you know, I mentioned with Guardians of the Galaxy and with Shang-Chi, that these were films that I didn't have a lot of expectation for because the comic book versions of them to me were very bland. They were role players. They were character actors. They were not Iron Man. They were not the Fantastic Four, X-Men, etc. Not only did Chadwick Boseman really bring the character to life, but the way that the entire film brought Wakanda to life, this setting of Wakanda, this culture of Wakanda, this technology, this philosophy of Wakanda that is just so appealing. And so it just draws you in. All the things that you mentioned earlier, great, great actors in the film, whether it's Martin Freeman, whether it's Michael Jordan, whether it's Angela Bassett, they were all terrific. They were great characters. But the story that was told and the drama that unfolded and the mythology that was created, and I am the wrong guy to talk about how African culture was represented in this film, but it did it incredibly well. It's a movie that I will watch at least once every 6 months or so and just remind me of what great superhero filmmaking is. And again, this was that unknown character that they built in just this beautiful, wonderful, larger than life character, like the Guardians of the Galaxy, like Shang-Chi, but on a much larger level as an individual character. And the fact that Wakanda has become such a central piece of the Marvel puzzle moving forward, or at least if you read the internet interwebs, it is. So I think it did a lot of things, but not the least of which was take this character and just make it so much larger than life. And that's why Black Panther's number three for me.
Yeah, I know you like it. It is a great film. The name Wakanda is now embedded as a piece of pop culture, pop history. You know, it was
absolutely.
You say the word.
I mean, I see a hell of a lot more Wakanda t-shirts than I see Avatar t-shirts.
Let's be thankful for that.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying, James.
Yeah, a lot of good in it. My son, without fail, when we watch Black Panther, though, when we get to the end, he just talks about the CGI getting a little iffy in spots here in the big battle at the end. He's a purist for that. He's a wannabe film student. It's like, okay,
Gen Z.
I know. All right. That takes us into our top two with
number two.
All right, Kirk, we knew what your number three was. What is your number two now?
My number two is your number three, and that's Iron Man. Iron Man is important. Iron Man set the stage. Iron Man created the universe, and you called out a lot of good actors in that film, but the one you didn't call out was Jon Favreau. And let's face it, without Jon Favreau, we don't have the Marvel Universe as it exists today because he set the tone.
Yep.
He built this first film and created a world that we could believe that a billionaire industrialist could build an armor and save the world. I mean, that's a ludicrous premise for a movie, but we bought it hook, line, and sinker. And come on, at the end of that film, that first tag with Nick Fury walking in and saying, I want to introduce you to the Avengers Initiative.
Yeah.
Oh my God. The 14-year-old me just went bananas. It was great. It was great. Now, you and I did see it. I think you remember I had a big problem at the end of the film when he said, I am Iron Man. And I'm like, whoa, 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 time out, time out. There's things called secret identities, kids. You don't want people to know who you are because they don't go after your family. Obviously, I was completely wrong about that one because everybody's identity is known at this point in time. So it works. And they've made it work in the Marvel Universe. I thought they told a great story. They were true to the story. I was a huge Iron Man fan, even though he wasn't one of the big three, Fantastic Four, X-Men, Spider-Man, Thor, Hulk, Captain America. Back in the day, he was a solid B. And in fact, it was mainly because all of those other properties had been loaned out at a certain point that Marvel had the exclusive 100% rights to do this guy. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful happenstance that was, that they were able to launch with this. And they planted the seed, and it has blossomed into what we know as the Marvel Universe. Enjoyable, enjoyable film, but I've got to give it number two just for the fact that it was the Garden of Eden. It was the very first. Everything sprung from this movie, and thank goodness for it. So Iron Man for me is my number two.
Well, you know, I like that choice. Very well done. Well, my number two, and as you were talking earlier and we were doing the unlisted and you said, oh, I have more cheats to come. And then we're going through our list and I'm seeing, and the math just isn't adding up. There's something wrong. Here's where the cheat is coming for you. So I have a feeling we're going to be talking about the same things, but let me talk about my number two, which is one of these two movies
in two different ways.
Yes. And it is the 2019 Avengers Endgame, directed by the Russo brothers, is my number two. What do you do after one of the biggest cliffhangers ever? Well, Endgame is the movie that answers that, and it does it really, really, really well. The first half of this movie is dealing with the sorrow of what happened in the prior movie. How do we reverse the damage Thanos caused after Infinity War? Who can we find to help us? How do we get the stones together so we can have a chance of combating Thanos and undoing his wrongs? Well, the second half is the missions about collecting the stones and the jeopardy and perils and victories and losses taken during that. And there's lots of them, and it's highs and lows, and it's not just easy peasy. There's a big climactic battle in the second half that has tons and tons and tons of hero moments. It's really shot and edited so very well. There's, you know, the appearance of the Wakanda group. There's the women united. There's all the time portals, lots of time portals, especially for Iron Man and Spider-Man and Star-Lord and Doctor Strange as they're battling Thanos. So much going on, so well done, so interesting. It just keeps building and building and building and building. And then after the victory is won, it's euphoric. The people who were lost at the end of the first movie come back into the world.
Spoiler alert.
Yep. But I think they know by now. But it's at a huge cost. We see Cap leave. And the biggest spoiler of all, we see Tony die. So victory is ours. It's this horrific Herculean task that they have to take. They do it. They do it well. And then the sad, sad ending. But overall, it's a win. Yay. So that's my number two, Avengers Endgame.
Good choice. I'm going to talk a lot more about it in just a minute.
All right. Well, I think this little snaking bit that we're doing is turning out very useful, because let's go to
the big kahuna, the top dog, the best of the best. Number one.
And it's my turn to start off. And so my number one, obviously, is the 2018 movie Avengers Infinity War, also by the Russo brothers. And what's better than Endgame? The film that set it up and left audiences literally wanting more. It's the epitome of that phrase. We wanted answers. What just happened? Are they really all gone? Can this be fixed? You know, there's so many superheroes and people in the universe who are dead now, but like the original Avengers, but times 10, we get to see all our heroes working together to save the world by the end of the movie. It's some characters are featured a little more than others. No one is shortchanged, and that's a feat in itself with the cast this big and these many stars involved in a movie. And they do a really, really masterful job of that. This and Endgame are just a great blended use of the superpowers and time bending and the raw motion to set up a truly devastating ending with the death of Vision and then 50% of all the living souls in the universe. It is the ultimate cliffhanger. It's a big wow, and so is this film, and I won't talk anymore because I know you've got a lot to say yourself. So, Kirk, and your cheat, what is your number ones?
It's the Kirk Cheat, the sequel.
Lift off and the clock has started.
Well, I mean, come on. Anybody who's seen him, you got it. It's basically one long movie.
Really?
It's one long movie divided into two and a half hour, three hour movies. So, yes, my number one is Avengers Endgame and, or Infinity and Endgame. As you mentioned, and you said it very well, if Avengers set up the first kind of, you know, can they pull off this group thing? This was times 10. Because it was not only all of the characters they'd introduced, but they'd set up literally the end of the very first big Marvel chapter, the first 18 films. So if you're not paying this off, you're losing the bet. It just didn't work. And it worked incredibly well. And again, they had a lot to pull off. There's a lot of heavy lifting in this film. You had to wrap up a bunch of storylines. We said goodbye to three huge characters. We said goodbye to Captain America. We said goodbye to Tony Stark. We said goodbye to Black Widow. You know, and they were all done very well. Everybody had to get their time. And it also had the chore of setting up the next chapter as well. As I mentioned before with the Spider-Man film that we talked about, they had to set up the multiverse. This had to set up who we're going to be going forward. You know, everybody who thought Thor would be the original Avenger to keep moving on. After this film, raise your hands. I don't think there's a whole lot of hands going up.
Right.
But I thought that what Avengers originally did, these both of these films, they did, again, the most difficult thing in the world. They paid off the expectation. I mean, I don't know. I will go on YouTube every now and then and look up audience reactions to the scene where Cap is facing down Thanos and the first time portal opens and you hear Sam say, on your left.
Yeah.
And you just hear the crowd start to rise. Yeah. And then when they see him fly through and the Black Panther and his army comes through and people just go bananas. I felt the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
It paid off. It was awesome. And we enjoyed victory. We enjoyed the defeat of Thanos. We suffered the loss of Tony Stark. We mourned the loss of Captain America in the sense that we didn't have him anymore, but we were so happy that he found his home back in the time that he grew up in. And what a great ending for Captain America.
He gets to actually live his life.
And that was a twist I didn't see coming. I didn't see that coming, that they would put him back in his time. What a great, great, great ending. They told a number of stories. They paid them all off incredibly well. They stuck the landing. And that is the most important part about these films. They stuck the landing. And that's why these two films are tied for my number one.
Yeah. And if you're going to cheat, this is a logical cheat. I get it. We lost four major characters, actually, because we lost Vision also, right? So Vision, Black Widow, Cap, and Tony.
Yes and no. I mean, when he reappeared in his own TV series 6 months later, it's kind of hard to say you lost.
Yeah, we saw another Black Widow film after this, too. So, but
that movie took place before the events because of COVID and all that.
I see what you're saying.
So you're not going to see another Black Widow, except you're going to see your sister be the Black Widow.
I see what you're saying.
But you're not going to see a ScarJo Black Widow.
Yep. Yep. All right. Good list. Fun list. Let's see. On our commons, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8. So eight.
Eight.
Yeah. If you can.
But we did not have any exact.
But you also had 11 selections.
Well, we had a half of an exact.
Half an exact. That's the way I was going to score it also. Okay, so you won one, you lost one.
Yeah.
But good job. Well, that brings us to
Unlisted, the sequel.
And on Unlisted, the sequel, even though we've kind of talked about a lot of these movies already, it's just a chance for us to give a shout out to the movies that didn't make our list. And I already mentioned that Captain America, the First Avenger, and Shang-Chi were those that were fighting it out with Doctor Strange for the number 10 spot. You mentioned Ant-Man. I give props to Ant-Man. I love Ant-Man. Also,
I really tried to find a place to put Ant-Man on.
I know it's, and it wasn't fighting for number 10, but I just want to give it its due because Paul Rudd is excellent. Absolutely. Michael Douglas, there's another one of those actors. You know, it's
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes. So full of fun. It explores all the other dimensions. There's danger to it. It's another guy trying to learn how to become a superhero who's not built to be a superhero. It's good stuff. Iron Man 3, I like a lot. The house party protocol at the end, as fun as it is to watch, it's a little convenient, but other than that, it's a pretty good movie overall. And then Captain America Civil War. I like that. It's where we first meet a couple of the characters, I believe. Spider-Man, for sure. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Good stuff. What about you?
Yeah, I'm on the same page with Civil War. Civil War was one of the few Marvel films that really felt like table setting. Like mm-hmm. they were trying to set up the next thing.
Yeah.
A lot of movies you can enjoy just on their own, but Civil War really felt like Empire Strikes Back. And I mean that in a good comparison, in the sense that it was almost like Endgame and Infinity Wars. Infinity Wars stopped and you knew that there was a second half to it. Civil War kind of felt the same way to me. So it wasn't as self-contained as some of the other films, or at least didn't indicate that there was a second half of the Civil War that we're going to pay off on that. It just felt like it was more about table setting in a lot of ways. I love Ant-Man. And if we did this a year from now, I'd be willing to bet we'd put Ant-Man in one of our top tens, because I have a feeling that the next Ant-Man that comes out is going to play a huge role in the table setting for the next big phase of Marvel, because it's Quantum Mania, yeah. And it's all about the quantum realm. Kang is in it. Kang's the big bad for the next one. He's the next Thanos. So it's putting him in a very front and center role. Yeah. This is what we're going to run into with Marvel now, is they really had to set the stage with their biggies, the Thors, the yeah. Iron Mans, the Caps, the Black Panthers. They're now trying to introduce new characters like the Marvels. Yeah, you haven't won me over with them mm-hmm. yet. The Eternals, you really haven't won me over with them yet. I'll watch it, and I want to see how it all fits together. But that's more about how they fit into the overall puzzle, not about the individual films themselves yeah. in a lot of ways. But it's really all pointing towards the Fantastic Four and ultimately the X-Men
yeah.
down the road. That's exactly where this is going. And that's where, the next big thing is going to be, which is going to be the Secret Wars. And that's the Skrulls and all that. And I'm giving away my Marvel nerdiness at this point in time.
Just your overall nerdiness. Yeah. I think it's all encompassing.
True. Anyway, so Ant-Man, I think Ant-Man, I really enjoy it. I love Paul Rudd. I think he's great in the role. I didn't think he would be. I think he's terrific. I yeah. also like Multiverse of Madness. The Doctor Strange sequel. I thought that did a lot to, again, set up the multiverse and portrayed a lot of different things and was a different kind of Marvel movie while still being a Marvel movie. So I think they did some good things there, too.
I did not love that one as much, but I liked it better than Black Widow, even though I thought Florence Pugh was fantastic and David Harbour was yeah. fantastic. And I love Rachel Weisz, but the movie just ups and downs and slow spots and this and that. So anyway, all right, very good.
So let me ask you this. If Black Widow had been one of the first ones that came out, would you have enjoyed it? Has Marvel set such a high bar that if they slip just a little, we find them disappointing?
It's not that they just slipped a little. It would have, if it was number one, it would have had the benefit of having nothing to compare it to. From the Marvel world. And so comparing it to other action films and stuff like that, it would have done fine. Is it a Raiders of Lost Ark? Hell no.
No.
Does it pale it to other action films? Yeah, it's going to pale, but it would have been better as number one than it would have been later. But then again, The Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton was number two, and that didn't do very well.
Yeah, that was a bad movie.
All right.
Bad movie.
We could keep talking and talking and talking. The show is going to be long anyway, so I think we'll wrap it up here because
we cut the guest out and it's still yeah. long. Yeah. Folks, if you haven't told by now, Steve and I like to talk. Okay, I like to talk.
So we're going to wrap it up now. But next episode will be in a couple of weeks, and it's going to lead us into February and Valentine's Day as we discuss best love songs. It can be from rock, pop, the movies, musicals, whatever. It's a love song. It qualifies. So best love songs. Get in touch with our sensitive sides for this one.
Yeah.
So make sure you join us for that one.
And you can find us wherever you get your great podcasts, whether it's Apple, whether it's Google, whether it's Stitcher, whether it's wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. And we are a member of the Buzzsprout community.
I'm assuming we still are. It's been a while. I have to check. But assuming we are, you can also find us on Buzzsprout at populous.buzzsprout.com. We do a little social media, and I do mean little. It will get better, though, on Facebook at facebook.com/populist or on Twitter at populist_pod. That does it for us. Good job, buddy. Great to be back. Looking forward to the next one. And we'll talk love songs. Not that you and I don't talk love songs enough on the side as it is.
We shouldn't be sharing. Excelsior, everybody.
Have a great time. See you in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.
See ya.